FM CHD3 Detroit, KMPS HD3 Seattle, WBMX HD3 Boston,
and on AOL Radio
and Yahoo Launchcast.
CBS Radio's The New Sky.
Enlightened philosophers tell us that we are divine beings in human form. Let's get real here. How can we live a busy life with a job, kids, and a mortgage and still be spiritual? Join CJ Liu as she tackles real life issues through a spiritual lens and talks with experts in relationships, work, and more. You'll get practical life skills and learn how to touch, feel, and experience a whole new way of living. Be a force for good. And fire it up with CJ. Log on, fireitupwithcj.com, and call CJ now.
248-545-SOUL.
CBS Radio's The Sky.
Believe.
Welcome back to CBS Sky Radio. This is Fired Up with CJ, and you can find us on fireitupwithcj.com for her website, or if you'd like to follow her on Facebook, you can just search on Fired Up with CJ there also, and you can contact her and see what she's got going on. It's almost the end of October, ladies and gentlemen, and tomorrow is Halloween, and I'm such a big child. Before we came on the air, we were talking about candy, and just so everyone knows, they're saying, I don't know if it's true, the top candy this year is Reese's Peanut Butter Cups, which I'm
okay with.
I know.
Yes.
And then they said Reese's Peanut Butter Cups, M&Ms, of course, Snicker Bars, of course, and Kit Kats.
I love Kit Kats.
That makes sense to me.
I think all of those make sense to me. I would actually only add, and I know it's quirky, and it's probably not the favorite one, but mine is Almond Joy. I love those things.
I like candy. I have to admit, I like candy. I like, you know, the Jawbreakers. I like it all. Even I don't eat the Mary Janes, and I don't know if you know what those are. They're kind of like aren't they like a maple-y type chili candy?
Yeah, they're called bit of honeys.
Yeah.
In the East Coast, they have the equivalent that's called bit of honey, and they're gross. I actually have a whole philosophy based on bit of honey. It's like when you feel like a bit of honey is like one of those things that comes to Halloween and you say, maybe if I try it again, it will be good this year. And it never is. But yeah, it's like that thing that you know that's not good for you, but you always want to try it anyways.
Right.
That's my bit of honey
philosophy. Well, you want to pay homage to it because someone has taken the time to buy that candy. Now, what child wants that? But you know what? If that's what you want to give out, fine. I just think it's the candy that the adult giving it out wants for themselves and not to give it out for the
No
for the
one
kids.
Wants bit of honey or Mary Janes. They're disgusting. Sorry.
I know. So I know. I already got into the candy at home, and I told my husband, I can eat this because I won't be home on Halloween. I have to work. And what I might do, since we're in a neighborhood, maybe if I put a little costume on and just go to a couple houses saying, I work for the radio station. Can I have some candy? Maybe they'll feel sorry for me and give me a few pieces of candy.
You're too funny. Well, this is a perfect time to be talking about our topic here with Sue Frederick because I had talked to someone who was a shaman before, and they said that Halloween is when the veil between the living and dead is the thinnest, which means that lots of cool things can happen soon because it is right around the time when the dead and the living are commingling together. And
I love it.
Even though, and here's the funny thing, I actually had an argument with a friend about death, and we were talking about living and death, and it's one of those things that it's one of those topics that next to sex and politics, people really don't want to talk about death and dying. And it's particularly hard. I've noticed when my dad passed away, or I've had friends who've had loved ones pass away, you're always at this kind of awkward sense of not knowing exactly what to say or what to do. And so our next guest, Sue Frederick, has written a beautiful book called Bridges to Heaven, and it introduces a whole new way of thinking about death so that it's less scary and more, I actually think of it in some ways, empowering. I don't even know if that's the right word to use, but that's how I feel about it. So welcome, Sue.
Hey, CJ. It's just a pleasure to be here with you.
So were you trying to change people's perceptions about death when you wrote this
book? Absolutely. I mean, I think that our culture has it all backwards, you know, that when we lose someone we love through death, it's defined as a tragedy or a random accident or something that's tragic and beyond our control. And yet once you've really stepped into feeling that connection from the other side, having your own communication with our departed, which we're actually all capable of, I write about that in my book, that then you know that they are in, they're doing awesome, and that they're looking in on us, trying to help us and guide us, and that it's not a tragedy. It was a soul choice, and it's a soul agreement between us and the departed that their exit wakes us up to a new dimension of who we are, why we're here, and how to do our great work.
Mm. All right, so I've always thought of that as, when my dad passed away, which was about 18 years ago, I always assumed it was something that he did. They're like, are you ready to go? You ready to go, David? And he's like, yeah, I think I'm ready to go. And then they're like, okay, we're taking you. Goodbye. You know, I assumed it was with his consent, and he knew.
Well,
is
actually,
that,
CJ, I think we actually make it that agreement before we come in for the lifetime. And this is what I've been told through my experiences of connecting to departed on the other side and through my own spiritual journey of exploration. I've really learned that we create a soul map for the lifetime, and it has our great soul mission in it. It has all of our significant relationship agreements in it, and it has, you know, when our exit point is. Although I'll even add that we often get two or three choice points of exiting in the lifetime, and we'll come upon one and decide, you know, am I done? Am I ready to go? And we can say no, but eventually we have to pick the choice point of exit and exit, and that's already been mapped out on our soul map before we come in.
Interesting. So that those two choice, and most of the times, is it just one choice point or two choice points are like, well, you have an option. You have an option to live.
Well, for example, I know of a woman I've worked with who lost her young son to a sudden illness, and that's a tragedy that every mother dreads and just can't imagine would be horrible. And she, he actually got the flu and had a complication from the flu, and he was 7 years old, and she found him not breathing in his bed. And again, this is what every human being fears, is losing a child, and especially losing a child like that. And she began to have her own experiences of hearing from her son on the other side. And one of the things he said to her was that it was the agreement they made before the lifetime began that he was going to break her heart wide open because he loved her so much, and force her to get out in the world doing her true work, which actually now she works similar to me, doing counseling and mediumship and helping people connect to their loved ones on the other side. And that was their agreement, and yet he had two other points before when he had tried to leave her when he was younger and couldn't, and he said that to her. He said, I tried to leave two other times, and I loved you too much, and I couldn't do it, and I had to take the third exit. And this mom went back and thought about it, and she knew of two other moments when he had had a medical crisis in his young life where she thought he was going to die. Mm-hmm. And the third time, you know, he took the exit. Now, that's not how we look at death here, and that's against everything that our culture believes about it. Mm-hmm. But if we can begin to explore those ideas and even try to have connection with the people on the other side, we can begin to change how we look at death.
Mm. Now, in that particular case, this little boy left because he had his mom had a soul mission, and that he wanted her to fulfill her soul mission.
Right.
Is it because that little boy fulfilled his soul mission, or was his soul mission to fulfill her soul mission?
No, absolutely. We don't exit a lifetime until we've fulfilled what we came to do. And we may just be coming in for this one little piece of growth here, or we may be coming in for a long lifetime of soul evolution. And I know, for example, that, you know, I'm in my 60s and I feel like I'm so glad I didn't exit when I was younger, because it seems like I've learned most of the important things for my soul's growth later in my life. And I know that we pick a lifetime that's going to bring to us the lessons that we need for our soul to evolve.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So that's what happens, is that we are kind of picking the lessons. Like it's already been kind of preordained. We signed a contract. We've said, here's our soul mission. Here are the relationships. And here's maybe one or two, or maybe just one exit point. And then that's how our soul mission is related to all of that.
Yep. And, yep. You know, whenever you're here grieving, and I'm just speaking to the people who my heart goes out to who have lost someone they've loved, and I hope they'll read my book, because I have many people's stories in there of grieving and losing someone they love. I just want you to know that this moment of your greatest pain is also your moment of greatest awakening. And if you can begin to help yourself begin to move through some of that grieving and pain and explore some new ways of looking at it, you may find your greatest lifetime adventure. You may find what you're really here for and how to step up to it.
It's hard to see that at the time. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
I remember in the crisis of my dad's
stuck
death.
We can get stuck in our grief and our anger and our pain for quite a long time, and it's perfectly okay, but we just can't waste the entire lifetime with being wallowing in our pain. And also, you know, our loved ones on the other side are trying to comfort us because they see us grieving, and in a way our pain blocks them from being able to comfort us and reach through to us. It creates a gray energy around us here on Earth when we're grieving, and it prevents them from being able to give us a message or whisper into our ear or give us a really firm, acknowledgement that they're with us. So the less we can spend time in that deep grief, the more we can begin to feel them around us.
Right. And you're saying, so when we're in pain, we kind of put in an unexpected kind of connection problem, so they can't hear us as well.
Yeah,
exactly. Or we can't
hear them. I remember one time my husband died when I was 29, and I was very angry at the world that, you know, my beautiful young mountaineering husband had died of cancer and suffered so much, and I was going through a big spiritual crisis, as most people do when they lose someone they love. And I remember this very evolved teacher came up to me and was talking to me about it, and he said, you have a lot of gray energy around your aura, and it comes from the way you're thinking about this grief. And you have to do your meditation and your work to clear that aura so that Paul, your husband, can speak to you. And I thought he was crazy at the time. And then as I really worked on my spiritual life and my meditation and began to remove some of that heavy energy around me, my physical appearance changed. I looked brighter, happier, healthier. My emotional spirit definitely felt better, and I began to see a reason to live and move forward, and immediately could hear Paul telling me things and showing me things and giving me signs.
Wow, that's powerful. So in your case, where, you know, your husband was an unexpected death, and the little boy who, you know, the mom woke up horrified to find him having, you know, not breathing. I mean, why does pain have to be part of it? I mean, I guess in that case you're saying the pain of his death so young was so that she could open up her heart. But is that why these kind of mysterious, unexpected, super painful, awful experiences, traumatic experiences happen that way?
Well, there's two questions in there, I think. And one question is, why do we suffer? You know, why do people have to suffer here on Earth? And what I'll say to that is that we don't have to suffer, but suffering is how we learn best. And it's just one of those unfortunate things about being human down here, that nothing really gets our attention until we are brokenhearted and we've lost something or someone we love. Then we're willing to come out of the details of physical life and start saying, wait a minute, who am I? Why am I here? Why did this happen? And where did my loved one go? Those are the important questions of evolving when you're here in a body in the physical world. And we'll just be happy, CJ, going about our day, having a great latte, having fun, until we hit a moment of reinvention with that kind of pain, and that's what gets us learning and growing. However, the other question I think is in there is, why would anyone, like a beautiful young child, have to suffer, okay? That's the question that rips people's hearts out. And the way I want them to consider thinking of that is, some souls may choose a path of suffering because they feel that they aren't worthy of God, or like they have a negative part of them that needs to be cleansed for some reason. And that's not true. Like, we don't have to cleanse ourselves to connect with God or purify ourselves, but some souls believe that the way to do that is through physical suffering. I mean, we have great role models of that in all of our religions, you know, Jesus on the crucifix and all of that. So people, in fact, Paul told me after he died in one of his connections with me, he said that he was sorry that he put me through his path of suffering, and that he realizes now from the other side he could have learned those lessons in a different way. And yet he and I both went through that and chose to go through it.
Interesting. So it's a suffering on both sides, suffering from his perspective so that he could learn the greatest before he passed, and suffering from your perspective. I mean, it's very interesting.
If somebody is caring for somebody they love who's sick, they're going through the suffering just as much as their loved one is, because there's almost no worse pain than watching someone you love suffer and being unable to stop it.
Yep, and we have to take a break, so we'll be right back talking about how the dead communicate to us. We'll be right back.